The Spinoff Podcast Network. Skinny are helping you show how smart you are with the 1Q Quiz, an all-new, super challenging and super quick daily quiz built by The Spinoff. Every Monday, Skinny are giving you the chance to prove you're smart with the Skinny Extra Credit question. Get it right, and you'll get the chance to score yourself some Skinny Extra mobile credit so you can text, call, or even video call your group chat and gloat about how big your brain is. T's and C's apply.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. The Investment Fix podcast. Tune in today.
Welcome to the Spinoff Superpod 2019, where we get as many spinoff podcasters as we can in one room to talk about the year that was and share our predictions for the year ahead. It's a hot mess of an idea that nobody asked for, and we're back for the third year in a row. So pour yourself a Baileys and settle in. Corleone Hayden Tierney, I'm the co-host of the Spinoff Feminist podcast and web series On The Rag. I'm joined today by my On The Rag co-host, Alex Casey.
Kia ora.
Who's also pulling double duty for The Real Pod, the experts on reality TV and real life in Aotearoa, with her co-host, Spinoff Big Boss, Duncan Grieve.
Kia ora.
And a big mahi to all the cornies listening. Duncan's also the host of the newest pod, The Fold, where he obsesses over the media with other media bosses. I'm also joined today by Toby Manhire, editor of the spinoff.co.nz.
Kia ora.
And political PR guy, Ben Thomas.
Hello.
They're two of the co-hosts of our politics podcast, Gone by Lunchtime.
It's not co-hosted.
Hosted by Toby.
Pulling rank. Yeah.
Helping them make sense of the year in politics is minor party enthusiast Alex Bray.
Hello.
Who produces The Bulletin every weekday morning straight into your inbox. Alex also co-hosted an epic Cricket World Cup podcast series this year, The Offspin, with New Zealand's most intense cricket fan, Spinoff commercial editorial director Simon Day.
That's me.
Simon's other obsession is food, and he co-hosts Dietary Requirements with our food editor, Alice Neville.
Kia ora.
They have kindly donated some festive bubbles for the Superpod today. Kia ora.
Can I also just say I also made a brief appearance on The Offspin.
Oh, sure, true. Yeah. We can cover all the cameos later.
Okay, sorry.
And finally, reaping all on her own for the literary folks of Aotearoa is Louisa Cossett from our books podcast, Paper Cuts.
Kia ora.
Welcome all. Thank you for joining us for this very ill-advised event. We're going to start with the lowlights of 2019 because we're going to get the whining out of the way. I'm going to start with The Real Pod. It's been a roller coaster for your pod because you guys lost Jane to LA.
Oh my god, I didn't even think about that as a low light. That's really ruined my ruined my life.
Right.
But yeah. Hey, predictions for 2020.
Well, Jane back.
I want her back.
You want a petition.
It's a prediction. It's a prediction. So that really messed up. But you know, we did figure out how to use Skype, which was useful.
Yeah, Jane's still with us. She's just like a little square that, in the middle of the table, and it's different. We've come to terms with it.
You've mastered the technology.
Yeah.
And what are the other your other lowlights? It's been a weird time in reality TV land in 2019.
Yeah, my highlight and my lowlight are both from the Married at First Sight cinematic universe. Yeah. New Zealand's version of Married at First Sight has basically always been horrible. Just some combination of boring and toxic, and it really like elevated that to its kind of most unpleasant example this year. With before it even started, one of the grooms turned out to have like an outstanding, I think, assault charge in a different country and had to be edited out, and it was just a very unpleasant and kind of protracted saga, and it sort of set the stage for a series that just really never got out of that funk, don't you reckon?
Well, it started with that and it ended with, you may remember in the finale, Jimmy calling someone a slut 6 times in one sentence.
Too many times for one sentence.
Exactly, exactly. And I think it really showed the kind of, it ran the gauntlet of kind of structural sexism and showed how it's all kind of interlinked in a web. You know, you saw the guy who was edited out kind of broing down with Jimmy in like one of the really early kind of stag do's. And I just think it was just really ugly and horrible.
I feel like a bit too much attention was given to Jimmy's sexism at the expense of his weird animalistic kind of National Geographic facial expressions. When he was threatening to beat up the 50-year-old guy, he just started sort of baring his teeth and licking his lips. It was like a kind of David Lynchian sort of end of Twin Peaks kind of horror scene, like he had seen somebody acting intimidatingly on a movie or something but never tried it out on the mirror before busting it out drunk on national TV.
Maybe we don't.
Then that has been Thomas's annual audition for Real Pod, which he always completely aces. And one of the most
literally
wrong-running...
walked into the building saying that he's only here to talk about maths. This is the high point of his year. I'm not even joking.
I've been dirt tracking in a fucking political podcast for 3 years just to get some good takes on reality TV out to the public.
Are there any other reality TV fans, or is it just all over here in the corner?
Yeah, I watched Maths. It got quite grim and depressing.
It always does.
Yeah.
It always does.
It's because it's a stupid premise for a TV show.
Totally.
Disagree.
And probably
look,
won't be coming back.
Got to meet someone somehow, Leonie, all right?
Alice Neville, season 2020.
Yeah, sure. Imagine that.
I'd also just like.
It would be amazing if Alice was in the spin-off.
I don't think they'd accept me.
On Married at First Sight.
It's the meta step they need to take for the genre, I think, for us to be inside.
Yeah,
as it unfolds. I'd also just like to shout out one of my other low light is Sam Wallace on Celebrity Treasure Island, who did not deserve to win.
Oh,
who basically,
right.
It was Shannon Ryan's game.
Yeah.
And Sam Waller showed himself to be a very bad sport. Really dumb in that final challenge. Him and The Wiz and Shane Cameron were running around. They had no idea how to put the clues together. It was just complete chance that he won. Shannon Ryan was robbed.
She was robbed.
It's the patriarchy, in my opinion.
Please forward your defamation letters to the spinoff.
that trio... If that's the patriarchy, incredible that it's lasted as long as it has.
Fair call. Yep.
Hey, well, that's a great way to segue. Thanks, Dunk. Speaking of the patriarchy, Alex and I, as I mentioned, co-hosts of Feminist Podcasts on the Rag. There've been some real shitters for women this year. I would probably say the worst part of the year would probably be Grace Mullane, her murder, and the trial around her murder. What do you think?
I would say that sticks out as a nightmarish low light that a lot of people are still recovering from. I particularly found the relentless coverage around it, unlike anything I've ever seen, kind of for my own mental health.
Yeah.
Really was a completely new sort of a journey. And I realized I couldn't trust myself to not read everything.
Yeah. Did anyone else get that? Just the media oversaturation?
Yes, yeah, especially around the trial. All the push notifications got a bit much.
Did you turn them off?
No, of course not.
This has just been part of my general media blackout for this year. I've decided not to consume really any current affairs because it makes me feel nauseous.
Really?
Mainly Trump stuff and Grace Mullane stuff.
Yeah. And will you continue that on for 2020?
Oh, we'll see. Maybe someone can change my mind. Maybe I'll.
I want to know what you think has happened this year.
Oh, I honestly have no idea. That's why I'm so nervous to be on this podcast.
How do you think Simon Rogers is doing as Prime Minister? Right amount of 10.
Will you turn your notifications back on next year for an election year?
Yeah, I probably will.
Yeah. Yeah.
More to say on that later.
More on that later.
My future predictions.
Pundits in the room. How are we looking for an election? Did 2019 set us up right, or is next year going to hell in a handbasket?
Can't wait.
Oh, cool.
The UK election was merely an appetizer. it's actually going to be really interesting seeing how much cut through our politicians can get in the midst of a US election. because primarily because of the internet, I think, but it's always been a factor. You know, Trump's re-election bid is, you know, cast a pall over basically the entire world. You know, as Louise was saying, you know, it kind of infects every area of our lives, right? Like, it's this constant presence with us psychically, you know, and a lot of the time, you know, physically and visually through media. And, you know, to what extent can Jacinda Ardern and Simon Bridges be more compelling than Trump and his re-election bid? So, it, you know, in a way, our politicians won't just be struggling against each other for airtime and oxygen, but the US.
Yeah. When is the US election?
Next year.
But more specifically.
it's sort of early November.
And the New Zealand election?
Who knows?
We don't know yet. It will be announced. I think the Prime Minister has signalled that she will, as her predecessor did, announce the election date in the kind of first couple of months of the year, and it will probably be September. As always, these things depend chiefly, and this isn't even a joke, on the All Black schedule.
Really?
Yeah.
Good God.
Because you don't want to have an election on a day when there's a home test match. Or a test match on that because elections in New Zealand are on Saturday, as we know.
Oh,
yeah, that's true.
School holidays as well is the other major factor. They want people in their electorates.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God, I'm learning. Oh,
so usually, once you know the sort of quarter of the year that it'll be in, you can usually narrow it down to sort of three or four possible dates.
Now, is it true that National have got some kind of sophisticated propaganda video making wunderkinds on their campaign now?
I'll ask Ben to confirm this because I know he enjoys talking on the subject, but I think they've got four floors underground in a nuclear-powered bunker, an Oriental Parade, with several hundred recruits from some of the most nefarious Russian troll farms working around the clock preparing memes. Right, Pip?
Broadly speaking, yes. It's actually an interesting illustration of the way that misinformation spreads in an election year, as tweeted by gallery star Henry Cook yesterday, that a lot of the people who are so concerned about the possibility of online misinformation in the election year next year just take it as an article of faith that Topham Gurr and the sort of social media wunderkinds who have helped Boris Johnson to re-election, helped Scott Morrison to re-election this year, are working for National and driving their impressive meme factory and disinfo engine. And it's not true. You know, there is no business relationship between Topham Gurr and National right now. I think there's a bit of cognitive dissonance that some people on the left feel a bit, you know, anxious about admitting that they're being owned online by a couple of 25-year-olds on parliamentary staffer salaries.
Sure.
It's true, certainly, that there was a delegation from the National Party that went earlier this year over to Australia to collect some learnings from the Morrison campaign, which, of course, won against the odds over Labor. And safe to say, I don't think anyone would deny that they took away quite a few lessons, including that they needed to be a bit more of the moment, a bit more zeitgeisty with their social media output. And it's working at the moment, mostly because everyone's in a lather over it.
Yeah, but that's internet culture, yeah. You know. I mean, I myself am a swift adapter of overseas memes. if I think there's any faves or RTs in it,
like, so, to be fair, they have to pass the spin-offs, Madeleine Chapman's scrutiny first.
High
she's very
bar.
Much your mentor. She grades you very harshly, memes, isn't she?
Yeah, she grades you very harshly.
I like to think of mine and Mad's relationship as a partnership.
Mentorship.
I did provide her with the well-being framework graph from Treasury, which, you know, it's my contribution to New Zealand meme culture.
Well, that was a hit, obviously.
Chapman Thomas?
Wait.
New firm? Just saying.
Although I think we all know that Mad's memes will be the highlight of the 2020 election campaign.
Absolutely.
For everyone.
That's a great prediction for the 2020 election. Alex Bray, as the guy with his finger on all of the pulses
when
it comes to news and media in New Zealand, when this year do you think we conducted ourselves the worst as a nation?
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, it's tempting to say, like, literally today, when the entire online world got really excited about a Twitter war between Simon Bridges and Nigel Latta, yeah. Which, I mean, it just sounds like one of those word salads sort of...
it really does.
You know, but, no, look, I think New Zealand's sort of political and media watching culture this year has conducted itself kind of as well as could be expected, and that's sort of really breathless and, you know, way overexcited about far too many things. And I think we can just expect that to continue.
Yeah, more of the same or a more intense version?
Oh, worse. Yeah, worse, much worse. Everything always gets worse in that area, so I would say much worse.
Do you have any other news lowlights for 2019?
Well,
there are a lot of, like, national disasters this year, to be
yeah,
fair.
Yeah, they are. I mean, they are definitely bad.
Oh, my God. They're disasters.
Too spicy. Edit it out in post.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think part of the problem with those sort of events is that they were really relentless this year, and they become so much so that, you know, you're just sort of like, wow, this is, it's all just happening again. Sure. You know, I think the way that I summed up the year when we did a similar sort of spin-offy thing last year was, wow, it turns out things can actually get worse.
Yeah.
And 2019, I could have just repeated the exact same thing, except for the fact that Toby was checking them, and so I couldn't just...
But you seem to be feeling a lot more positive about the global community's ability to mitigate climate change.
What gave you that impression?
Yesterday you said in the bulletin, in reference to China, Australia, and the US,
that
such countries will be the death of us all.
Yeah, yeah. So what we really need to do is just stop thinking about those countries. And I think we'll all be a lot happier if we do.
Well, sage advice there from Alex Bray.
As always.
I'm going to assume for the offspin, for both Alex and Simon, one of the biggest tragedies of the year was probably almost winning the Cricket World Cup and then not winning World Cup.
Well, I've come to reconcile that game by thinking of it as if we had won in the way we should, it would have been maybe a top 10 game of cricket of all time.
Yeah.
But the way we went about losing it meant that we got to participate in the single greatest game of cricket ever played.
Well, that's a positive spin.
Yeah, so it's both the highlight and the low light of my year.
It's a very New Zealand idea, isn't it?
I know, isn't it?
Well, when you wait your whole life for something to happen that might never happen again, and you don't quite reach the pinnacle of that moment, you know, you have to try and find a way to make sure that your entire existence wasn't just a waste of time.
Can you talk us through the actual World Cup time and the podcast that you guys were recording, because you guys were doing some pretty gnarly, like 3 a.m., 4 a.m. records, and so a lot of all-nighters. Did you go mad?
A little bit. I think what can really capture the whole sort of vibe of the spin-off was I stayed up all night to watch New Zealand play Bangladesh. Very close game. I was watching us just become victorious in the car park of Mercy Hospital, where I went in to have my 8-week scan. And my wife was newly pregnant. And sort of half an hour after that adrenaline-filled match, which I'd stayed up all night for, I found out we were having twins. And then I had to go straight from Mercy Hospital to the studio to record a podcast with Alex. Millie was just driving around and around the spin-offs block not knowing what the hell to do. And then I had to...
I just want to point out, I did not know about this and I would have sent him back outside if I had.
But then I had to spend the whole day at work as well. It was, you know, things got rough.
Would you describe it as buzzy?
It was very buzzy. Yes. The biggest buzz was the weirdest buzz was that day after the final, trying to work after that match.
Was that when Toby was wearing sunglasses inside the whole day and our faces were all the color of sort of
Toby,
you know, ancient ash?
Toby looked like he had, Toby looked like he had just lost his children in a savage custody battle.
Worse.
I just arrived back from a fleeting visit to Europe, so I was jet lagged and sad and tired.
It was an emotional
and probably
time.
Hungover, knowing me.
Yeah, actually, just on that, that was actually one of the highlights of the podcast, getting a live report from Lourdes itself.
Yes, thank you,
from
Alex.
Alice Neville. Typically, when people give live reports in the news, it's about the actual events that are unfolding. But Alice had absolutely no interest in that. We heard a lot about the beer. We heard a lot about the curry there.
The colour.
I think I said some stuff about the cricket, but then you cut it out. And then what actually went live was just the atmos, the vibes, which was fine. That was good.
I mean, we ran out of time.
Yeah.
So the vibes were what was most important. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that was great calling in.
Check.
Do you know at Lourdes you can BYO alcohol, which just blew my mind. So that's why I sounded very merry, though we'd lost.
Hey, Alice.
Yes.
Describe to me the absolute worst food trends of 2019.
See, I just saw that on your screen and was like, ah, food trends of 2019. Okay, so.
Or restaurants, Uber or Eats. Food people.
There's been a lot of Uber Eats, like ghost restaurants. That could be seen as a bad trend, I'd say.
Eats is the worst trend. Yeah. Uber Eats is killing New Zealand restaurants.
Can you explain why?
Yeah, why are the ghost restaurants specifically bad?
I don't know. I just was clutching
at
straws.
I mean, they're quite scary. Yeah.
Spooky. They're fucking terrifying.
Spooky food.
Trends, I don't know, with freak shakes. Were freak shakes this year?
I think they might have been on the bad food trend list for last year.
What about
year,
donut walls? Is that 2019?
Oh, well, fucking platters where you've
grazing
got
table.
The grazing
I
table.
I believe
that's
we dissected
trend.
Grazing yes. tables last Super Pod.
See, I don't know.
So I remember Toby kind of awaking from a nap and just like saying something weird about hampers.
Yeah, I remember that.
What's a modern hamper?
Well, yeah, what's a donut?
It's just like a piece of wood with a bunch of like.
It's like a climbing
knobs
wall.
On it with donuts hanging off it, and it's always like, "Do not leave without taking one."
Oh my god!
Oh my god!
Like
I've never
a PR
had that.
Event slash wedding.
I think I love it.
That's like, a good trend.
Where have you experienced this?
Online.
Oh. I had one. I had one at the Breakers, which bad. Speaking of bad trends,
yeah.
So you know they really confirm it.
I've got some low lights, but they're not trends as such.
Have at it.
Cadbury continued to fuck us over by splitting the marshmallow Easter eggs. So they were half eggs.
Oh, yeah. That was a big scandal.
Yeah, but we fixed them, didn't we Alex?
Together,
we glued
right.
them back together and you helped, didn't you?
Yeah.
Leone,
you can always
yeah.
rely on the spin-off to do the hard work.
Other low lights, there were a lot of closures and bad times in the hospitality industry as a whole. Queen's Rise, my story, there were a lot of woes there for the businesses. You can read my story for more details.
Spinoff.co.nz.
Yeah, Mercury Plaza closed, Clooney closed. Overseas, there was the Jamie restaurant empire falling, if you recall that.
He's still like a multi-billionaire,
though,
right?
He's fine.
Like we don't feel bad for him about that, do we?
Yeah. Nah, not really.
He's all right.
He's all right.
Toby, can I ask you about a food thing?
Yeah. Yes.
There was a restaurant that closed on Ponsonby Road after an all you can drink brunch.
Yes. Gone
Mr.
wrong.
Mr. Tom's.
Gone wrong. And there were a few news stories about it, about how disgruntled patrons had been left getting drunk in the sun for hours on their free margaritas while their food didn't arrive. And then both of the stories just had a sort of stray aside about how a waiter told the customers that everything had been tracking along fine until the two chefs had like fallen out completely and both left in opposite directions.
That's probably always
and
not a good sign.
I want 8,000 words on that.
Yeah.
I want like a long read on the boring Ponsonby Road chefs who like left everyone to like dehydrate in the
sun.
Was
this just in one day? The chefs just got angry and left and then everyone got drunk
over the course of brunch, I think.
Yeah.
Wow.
Bottomless brunches was definitely a bad trend, actually, of 2019.
Yeah, I feel like they're quite kind popular, aren't they?
It's not surprising that it ended up in two chefs fighting and people not getting their
food. We can't be, like, trusted. New Zealanders can't be trusted to have bottomless anything.
That's true.
So in Japan, they have bottomless. You get an hour to eat as much food and... you can get free drinks. You know, you pay for a window of time at these Japanese restaurants, and lovely Japanese people go in and just use it as a little bit of freedom. But when New Zealand tourists go and experience,
it's a challenge.
Yeah,
it is a disaster.
Yeah,
I think the club meds around the world have like all you can drink packages, but the Pacific ones are the only ones they don't have them at because they can't trust
too close. New Zealand
and Australian tourists.
I have a food query.
Yes.
Because this is also one of my lowlights of the year. You might remember Erin Simpson's lunch from the day before her wedding.
Yeah, I do.
She Instagrammed a photo of her lunchbox. Her mum had made her lunch. Cute. And it was two hard-boiled eggs, two yogurts, and kind of just like a smear of mayonnaise.
Where was the mayonnaise?
In its own little container.
Oh, weird.
It was like a little bento lunchbox, so it was split up. But I'm like, that's in a car, that's room temp, that's the day before your wedding.
Yeah.
And I've got a lot of feelings. We started the kind of private versus public egg debate on the Real Pod, which kind of went viral, and that two different people came up to me and said, I'm with you on the private eggs.
I think it's a private food. Mark Kelleher was eating a boiled egg yesterday at work or the other day.
This is this is news to me today. I prodigiously eat a lot of boiled eggs.
Yeah.
And I had no idea I was disgusting Alex.
It's not other people doing it. It's like I constantly live in fear that someone's going to like give me an egg sandwich.
Right.
Oh, in like a social situation.
So
I know that Toby has these feelings about eggs.
Because
it's
yuck or because you'd feel yuck for eating it?
It's just an intimate thing. An egg sandwich.
If you have a private retreat to eat the sandwich.
Fine.
That would be fine.
I need a panic room. Like this studio.
This tiny
And you eat
studio.
Eggs in there and you eat like the last little bit of the kebab.
I'm fine with an egg sandwich. I thought we were just talking about whole boiled eggs, which are a particular shameful item. Tasty, don't get me wrong.
I reckon that's all equal at school for having hard-boiled eggs for lunch.
Yeah, I bet you did.
What didn't you bully people at school?
Oh, my God.
This is rocking the nation.
It is.
Debate.
I think Simon
Louisa, what does the literature say about eating boiled eggs?
I'm trying to think of, like, some great examples of egg eating in literature.
Surely Roald Dahl wrote
fucking Moby Dick or some shit. Yeah,
Tell us what the biggest scandal of the year in the book world was.
Yes, yes. Well, there are a couple of international award scandals. So one of them, I mean, it depends on like how you look at it, whether it's a scandal or not. But the Man Booker Prize, for the first time in almost 30 years, was jointly awarded. And there's nothing that pisses people off more than a draw, I think. It's very unsatisfying.
And they went one up on the Turner Prize, right? And they gave it to everyone, all the people who won the Turner Prize. That's a visual art prize rather than a book one. But it's like the UK is kind of somehow like kind of spasming against the idea of all the terrible people running the country just sharing everything out.
But I also think a lot of people were like, Margaret Atwood probably doesn't need that prize money.
Oh yeah, so to backtrack, so the prize was won by Margaret Atwood for her new book, The Testaments, obviously the sequel to the hugely successful The Handmaid's Tale, which is having a renaissance due to the TV show. And the other winner was Girl, Woman, Other by Bernardine Evaristo. She is a UK author. Follows the lives of multiple characters. Some are female, they're all female. Some are trans, some are young, some are old. Apparently it's awesome. Full disclosure, I haven't read it.
Oh,
I have read The Testaments.
The biggest scandal of them all.
I know. So yeah, like you say, Leonie, like people were all like, oh, well, does Margaret Atwood really need it? Like it kind of is a bit stink because, you know, Margaret Atwood, hugely successful already.
Yeah.
Bernardine Evaristo, hadn't really heard of her before. It's a big thing for an author to be able to put Man Booker Prize winner, but stink to have to put in brackets, like jointly.
Right. But like surely that'll be the most memorable Man Booker that has ever been awarded, right?
Yeah, it might even work out better. I can't remember any others at this moment.
Well, neither can I.
Yeah. No, you're right. It's a good story and maybe it'll stick in people's minds a bit longer and will have a life other than just being like something that you chuck on the jacket of her next book. So Can I add one more award scandalo?
Sure.
So John Banville, also a novelist. What has he written? Oh, I don't remember. He's written some lovely books. Yep. And he got a phone call the day before the Nobel Prize for Literature was to be announced. And the call came from a Swedish telephone number, and they told him that he had won the award. He hadn't won the award. He had not won the award.
That's the meanest prank ever.
It was Jono and Ben. So mean.
And you can hide away.
You feel
it's
it,
worthy
Alex.
Of
you
them. Oh, maybe they wouldn't even stoop so low. And so there's a really sad article that you can view online on the Irish Times, I believe. And the headline is, I believed it. And there's a little sad photo of John Banville's sad wee face. So do recommend looking for some schadenfreude.
This is that's sort of the opposite of when Ashley Young won her mysterious international prize for her book of essays, and she, you know, thought it was a spam email because she had never heard of the award.
That's a very Kiwi reaction. It really must be a mistake.
Yeah. Toby, you should interview that guy at the Reader Writers Festival next year.
John Banville.
Yeah.
I'll sort it out.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. Get on that. We all want to hear about that first hand.
I was going to say on the highlights and lowlights, we've touched on it glancingly, but we should mention Christchurch before we get out of that period of it, which was, I think probably, lowlight almost seems glib to describe it, but what happened in Christchurch on the 15th of March was also a crazily kind of a highlight in some ways, both because in terms of some of the things that everybody seemed to learn as a result of that. And I think particularly we've had the misfortune in recent decades to see a lot of political responses to appalling terrorist acts that have used those acts in kind of quite naked, politically expedient ways. Most recently with Boris Johnson and that attack on London Bridge, where he immediately used it as a campaigning tool. And I think that the political response to that led by Jacinda Ardern and from the Muslim community in Christchurch was kind of incredible. And so I just sort of think we should just worth acknowledging along the way.
It was definitely the saddest thing that's happened to our wee nation in a long time.
It was shocking. I remember I worked through quite a few bad things happening in New Zealand, such as the Christchurch earthquake. And I just remember I never didn't feel, I don't know, it just was so shocking and just awful and upsetting.
It brought out the best in our leaders, but I hate to say it, it has opened the door to a lot of public racist sentiment for some reason after all of that outpouring of love by so many people in New Zealand and all around the world. It also somehow gave a bunch of white supremacists permission to go harder than ever.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think there was a brief period in which it looked like we might actually become a less racist nation as a result of it. And I kind of feel like a lot of that sentiment among people who didn't already necessarily hope for it to happen, a lot of that sentiment has already dissipated.
And then, of course, our most recent national tragedy was the awful eruption on Whakaari. But again, it has brought out a lot of the best of people in the Bay of Plenty and in Whakatane, and I feel like a lot of the international families that are here grieving for the people that have survived and not survived been embraced by the locals really well, which is nice to see.
Yeah, as we had a piece from Catherine Delahunty at the weekend, I think, about how tangata whenua really lift us up. And, you know, we're so lucky to have that in New Zealand in times of tragedy, and how they're looking after the international families so well.
Fucking scary place to live in New Zealand, though. Like, this is very, very full on, but these volcanoes are everywhere.
Yeah. I used to have nightmares when I was a kid about the fact that I was just surrounded by volcanoes. Anyone else?
Well, I grew up in Wellington, so.
Yeah,
the last thing you
want to
do is live
it.
On a volcanic field, right?
Yeah. We're all fucked.
Awake for about a year when I was about 8, scared of earthquakes because they just kept happening, thinking I was going to die. But
in Wellington?
Yeah.
To me, it's more frightening the thought of, you know, when you go, when you're a tourist, or when you're doing any activity, you assume that someone's in charge and that someone's responsible and that everything. Because I've always been really anxious and I'm always like, what about this, what about that? And then my go-to to calm myself down is to say, look, people don't just make you do something really dangerous for fun.
Yeah. But like, we wouldn't be going if there was any risk. Sort of.
Yeah.
The same time, that's part of the appeal. The reason why people were there was because it's risky and scary and it's nature on the edge. Like,
and that is why I will never go.
So I actually went on a White Island tour last year, and it was very, very clear from it that the number one risk was not an eruption. Even though the guides did talk about the fact that there could be an eruption, the number one risk was basically tourists walking off the path. Like, I think people have focused on the eruption as being what the danger was of White Island, but really it's sort of a strange place to have tourism at all, because it's literally, if you take one step in the wrong direction, you'll fall into like an acid lake.
Oh, right.
Which, I mean, in hindsight, you know, everyone's an expert, but also in hindsight, there was probably going to be some sort of disaster at some stage with this, and maybe people should have seen it coming a little bit more.
Were you on LSD when you were walking around on White Island?
Absolutely not. I've never done anything illegal in my life. So,
let the record show.
He's just grinning right now.
All right. Well, okay.
On my knowledge.
In the interests of lifting our spirits, without seeming glib, I would like everybody's highlights of the year. They can be your personal highlight. They can be on the kaupapa of whatever your podcast is about. Let's just tell the world what we're feeling good and happy about from 2019. I'm going to start with you, Alex, and go this way.
About this year or next year?
This year.
This year, I think, from the perspective of the Offspin podcast, learning to really love cricket again. You know, it's always been a relationship which has been so much more heavy emphasis on the hate part of the love-hate relationship. But this year, I think, you know, win or lose, it was just beautiful to see.
Wow.
You were beautiful to listen to as well, Alex.
You were, Alex. I loved it.
Sorry. My highlight was at Wellington on a Plate, which is a really incredible festival. It was the first time I visited, and it's just a month-long celebration of all the amazing things New Zealand does with food. And they get incredible international guests as well, and I got to be fed by and then hang out with Nancy Silverton.
Oh, my God, so jealous.
Who was one of, you know, people say never meet your heroes, but she was an amazing cook and super cool and very, very tolerant of my fandom as well, which was kind of her.
It is very nice. Alice?
My highlight is equally as highbrow, in that it is Mad Chapman's chip ranking, which was in March, I think. And it just gladdened my heart, and it gladdened the hearts of the nation and made some people very angry. And it got a lot of clicks for the food section.
My favourite part of that.
You loved it.
But it just, I reread them recently, her original post and then the response. And it's just so, I just love it. It's just so good.
Disgruntled people were calling the general manager of Freedom Farms, our wonderful sponsors of the food section, demanding that the rankings be changed.
People took it very seriously.
Yeah, the way over your head.
Poor Hillary.
Follow the money.
Thanks, Hillary.
Thanks, Hillary.
My highlight of the year, just to be a real corny corn dog, is basically just continuing to work at thespinoff.co.nz. I'm thankful for thespinoff.co.nz. I believe in independent media, and I think the people who listen to what we do and read what we do believe in it as well. And it's just a year-long highlight to work here at this wonderful
Duncan's
place.
Duncan's weeping.
I know, Duncan's crying.
And if you love the spin-off too, please join the members.
Yes.
Yes.
If you want to see great independent journalism continue to be made, you can help support that.
Unless you want to see Duncan Grieve crying tears of pain rather than joy.
I'll take either.
Yeah. There you go.
Sometimes it's hard to tell the difference with him.
It's true.
Tears, joy, sadness.
Louisa, highlights?
I think for me, and probably for the podcast, I'm just going to speak for Paper Cuts, going down to Verb Literary Festival in Wellington. This was the first year where they had expanded from Lit Crawl, which is quite a small, wee little bookish festival, into something much larger with international guests and so on. And it was just a really lovely vibe. Wellington, famously way more chill than Auckland. Sorry about it.
yes, no apology needed.
There was nary an iron grey bob or, you know, twin set, sharp elbowed pensioners trying to trample you. Sorry, I had a bit of a time at the last Auckland festival. So really do recommend that if you guys have the ability next November or this coming November, I forget which one it is, to check that out down in Wellington.
I agree. With
oh, yeah, I saw you there.
Having got, been to a bit of that and just think Claire Mabey and Andrew Laking just did an amazing job.
Fuck yeah.
The best in the country at what they do.
And actually, Claire Mabey will be, she's curating the Wellington, the International Festival of the Arts, their book week this coming February, let's say, March, don't know.
I'll be interviewing John Bamble.
Oh.
That was quick.
Yeah. Shit.
You're right. Alex Casey.
Hello. I have a lot. Real pod wise, and kind of personally, I mended my relationship with Erin Simpson this year, which is a huge highlight for me.
You might have just ruined it again with the egg.
It was tough. Yeah. She knows. She knows. And I'd also like to nominate, are we doing our object, the Hall of Famers?
We're going to do our honours and dishonours list after this.
Oh, okay.
We'll do both at once. So, hold on to that
highlight. Also, meeting Sophie Hanford, my doppelganger / climate strike extraordinaire, really made me feel positive about the future in a way that I have not felt for a very long time. All those young women leading the charge with the climate strike.
It's going to be okay.
Oh, made me cry on the train home after meeting her. And also, she looks like me, so I get a lot of nice messages when she wins awards.
Yay. Great. Duncan.
What you said before, which made me weep a little bit, just a couple of cheeky tears. That was very nice. Real pod-wise, I'm just going to do complete the twin set from my low light and say that Married at First Sight Australia was the absolute, like, it was unbelievable. Like, I don't think it should be a thing that exists in the world, to be clear. Like, it was decadent and depraved and all kinds of wrong. But, like, Sam, Dan, Innes, and Jess, like, cheating,
conniving,
just appalling human behavior, but went into it with the most open eyes and closed hearts. Guaranteed that we all lost, and it was just the whole spectre of it was just the most riveting, like nauseating, extraordinary television experience. I think during there was this sort of final interview thing that we watched as a group, one of the last things we did before Jane left the country, and it was just one of the best, most bizarre. Like, how is this where humanity is? Just the bleeding edge of what we're doing to one another. Mostly online, but in this case, like, on chairs in a room. And it was freaking spectacular. Also, one last... I'm just going to keep doing this because I actually have to go now, which is a classic RealPod staple that I'm
really
just going to insert
really
into the SuperPod. Carly Rae Jepsen was a show that I've been waiting a long, long time for. And I was at the town hall. Everything
He's
was bathed in this
again.
Kind of... I am crying again. I'm crying out of all my pores. It was just bathed in the soft pink light. There were a lot of people crying at the freaking venue, just nakedly weeping at the quality of the performance and the songs, which said so much to us. And everyone was just dancing like it was their last night on earth, which who knows, you know, one of them. And it was just it was beautiful. I was so happy. I was so happy. I wanted to live forever in that moment. Fucking crying again. Carly Rae Jepsen, I adore you with my whole heart. I know you're listening. I got to go.
Bye, Duncan.
Bye, Duncan.
Bye, Duncan.
Duncan out.
Crazy.
Dude, out. Toby, talk us through it.
Just left, so my highlight was easily the time that we did a video in which it was meant to be a promotional video for the book, but everyone at the spin-off did their impression of Duncan dance.
That was so good.
Oh, yeah. And it was quite special, and it's kind of now buried forever in a vault.
Yeah, it's a shame we can't share it with the world.
Layers of brick. Well, Duncan we know where it is.
Carly Rae Jepsen.
So if things ever go fully belly up, we can use it for blackmail purposes.
Good point.
Less seriously, since we're meant to be a political podcast, I guess I felt that the zero carbon bill, well, a long way from perfect, was the fact that it was supported across the house, apart from Ben's close personal friend David Seymour, was a pretty amazing moment, and hopefully we'll get better from here rather than being wound back. But I thought that was a pretty huge moment.
Politically, my highlight was very similar to Alex's. I met my doppelganger Matt Ducey from National. Yet to meet my other doppelganger, and what's Christopher Luxon?
if he goateed up, he might be.
National is heading into 2020 with the finest looking stable of candidates for quite some time.
And if Ted Johnston grew a goatee,
oh my god, yes.
Simon Day just did a visual gag, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. Who knows who Ted Johnston is?
I don't know who that is.
A mayoral candidate whose poster we naturally have in the recording studio.
In Auckland. Are you only Auckland.
Steal those?
So I didn't steal it. It wasn't stolen.
And cut.
It was about to blow into the sea at Cox's Bay, so I rescued it from the environment. And brought it back to the office because Toby Morris loves Ted Johnston's billboard so much.
It is like
Toby Morris wants it. It's international waters. It's not exactly. It's not a crime.
And in terms of political stuff, obvious, you know, the highlights are, you know, the admirable bipartisanship on the Carbon Zero Bill Act. Now the response to the Christchurch shooting from the major parties. And another highlight, I think, is actually the announcement of the port move, which I and my colleague Matthew Hooden have been banging on about for years. Just on a personal, visceral level.
Oh my god.
It's kind of encouraging.
Oh my god.
Duncan just went back in to shut down this shameless PR shilling.
Yeah. Please continue, but not for too long, Ben.
It is nice because we were promised a transformational government. We were promised big changes, you know, the rollback of neoliberalism, whatever. Now, I don't know whether the port move, you know, counts in that regard, but it is actually an example of the government finally being bold about something big, which is, you know, something that we have, you know, that has been absent for a couple of years. On a personal note, the best thing I've done this year is spend 4 months living in the bush down in Waikato Moana.
Oh, great. Yeah.
So,
you've gone full Ngai Tūhoe.
Well, yeah, well, commercial disclaimer, I've been doing some work for my friends at Tūhoe. They've been putting me up next to the lake. But, you know, in it, when we see, you know, like this shitstorm with O Wairaka, you know, with people sort of trying to kind of, you know, second guess the treaty settlement process, mm-hmm. and then, you know, attacks from the left about the inadequacy of the sort of process. And then when you actually see, you know, an example of a post-settlement iwi, which is really sort of forging ahead and doing really great things for its people, for its environment, you know, it makes you pretty happy to be a New Zealander, I think.
Mana moto hake.
Kia ora.
Kia ora.
So that was our highlights. I've asked you all to come prepared with entries for the third annual spin-off honours board and the spin-off dishonours board. So staying with Alex again, please tell me your entry for the honours board and the dishonours board.
The honours board is a really easy one. Jimmy Neesham is easily the most famous person to come on our podcast. So that's very, very clear. And you know, he was quite a good talker as well and stuff, but mostly the fame thing. Dishonours board, also about a guest on our podcast. I'm going to put Callum Henderson up there, former spin-off contributor. Because we recorded a podcast at about 2 a.m. after the Sri Lanka game with him. He was very drunk.
And yeah, look,
recorded for about an hour and got 25 minutes of material out of it because he kept on fucking defaming Simon Dool. And quite frankly, you know, it was just a pain in the ass. At that time of night, I was just not into it.
Would you consider releasing the raw audio for a sort of a private audience?
Yes, yes, indeed. As long as
platinum spin-off member status, you get to listen.
You donate
as an amateur podcast producer, I had to edit that at the 4 o'clock in the morning while the sober driver for the group as well, so it was very unfair. Callum goes on my shit list as well.
Your honours list, please, Simon.
My honours board is Darius Lulaye and Bex Schmidt, who run Cazador.
It's just that premise is not supposed to work. It's a weird spot at the end of Dominion Road. They have a time-consuming attention to detail and use produce that Darius himself has shot. You know, he makes his own charcuterie. It's just, they're only open 4 days a week. They have this investment in their staff's health. That's just really amazing in the hospitality industry and super necessary.
Yeah.
Toast. Oh. Colin.
Tita.
What a very shaken up bottle of champagne. And Darius is so fucking hot. I just love to imagine him coming out of the bush with a deer on his back.
That's how I imagine Ben Thomas going to the airport.
Simon honestly talks about Darius in like every podcast we do.
Yeah, so
he's a very good looking man.
He's a very good looking man.
Shout out Darius. I've really got this Iranian thing that I love.
what?
And the dishonors list is the New Zealand public and the amount they complain about how much food costs. It's really, really hard running a cafe or a restaurant. And if I hear anyone complaining about a $4 flat white again, I'm going to foot trip you. Like, you need to understand how much you can pay $6 for a flat white and people are still making like 5% margin. So invest in the wonderful cafes and restaurants that we have here because it's a real hustle to survive and stop fucking moaning all the time.
Yeah.
All of you, you're on watch, New Zealand. I'm coming for you.
Okay. Thank you for that very menacing entry onto the dishonors board. Alice.
My honours list, I have two. You guys can choose which one you want. The first one is the Karitsa, which is a curry pizza hybrid that has emerged in Wellington. I reviewed it, as I'm sure you all remember and read.
What kind of curry is it?
It's any curry you want. It's like a curry, a pizza topped with an array of... Did you not read my review?
Yes, I did, but I read so many of your things that
I just write so much. It's just, ooh.
Is there like a snob thing, like kind of like pineapple on pizza, where people are like, butter chicken on pizza?
Oh, yeah. Some people were horrified by the karitsa.
Like a nice dry curry. A sloppy one is obviously
It was. I got like a paneer, some sort of spicy paneer. It was beautiful.
Was it best thing you had all year?
No, but it just popped into my mind when I thought honours board.
Great.
But also then I thought slushies should be on the honours board. Remember slushies?
Absolutely.
Slushies. So either of them.
And dishonours?
Dishonours, Teagle.
Oh.
And all big chicken, nasty, nasty, intensive chicken farming, like the one where 190,000 chickens died recently, which did not even dent New Zealand's cheap chicken supply. You should Google what those factories look like because they're pretty grim.
I'm imagining what Teagle slushies would taste like.
Oh.
Yeah.
that's what chicken nuggets are made out of.
Yeah,
isn't
true.
Yeah.
What about a Karitsa slushie? Now you're talking.
Thank you for that.
What about you, Leonie?
So my honours board, I would like to enter Te Ara Whatu, who are a youth indigenous climate group here in New Zealand. They're currently at the COP25 climate conference, just fucking shit up and making trouble, protesting, getting kicked out of stuff.
Good on them.
These guys are so cool, and much like Alex's faith in Sophie Hanford, they're mostly young women, but there's a couple of young men in there. These activists really give me hope that the world is not completely fucked and that indigenous values when it comes to climate change and crisis might actually be listened to because they're very hard to ignore, which is what I love about them most. Dishonors board, it's going to be a tie between the whining assholes on Oi Wairaka. We have no right to be there protesting about a bunch of trees that don't mean nothing to nobody.
Leonie, they're mana whenua. They arrived by plane 50 years ago.
Lisa Prager gets a special shout out for claiming to be mana whenua. She can fuck right off. And they are tied with Garrick Tremaine, who knows what he did.
Yeah,
because the entire country told him to go away. and jump in the bin, and he lost his job for his terrible, terrible racist cartoon. But to be fair, it's not the first racist cartoon he has created for the Otago Daily Times. It's just the one he got fired for. So the editor gets a dishonourable mention as well, because we all know he only bowed to pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Those are my entries.
You go.
Right on.
Can I just say one thing about the dishonour one for Garrett Tremaine and the editor? Could I just maybe put the other ODT staff on the honours board for speaking out about it?
Yes, totally. Yeah, good one. They were great. They stood up for themselves.
Yeah.
My turn?
Yes.
All right. So for the honours board, I thought it'd be a real suck up, and these are objects, I hope that's okay. For the honours board, put the spin-off book.
Yay!
Yay! I know, so gross, sorry.
$50 note sliding.
Duncan's crying
again.
Sucking
up to you guys and to my, also my own employers, just like killing all those birds. And for the dishonours board, it's a bit of a tie, really, and it's a bit tenuous that this is related to books, but the Cats trailer was very horrifying. And if I can just like quickly tell a quick anecdote, is that so it's based on the book by T.S. Eliot, and it turns out that the rights for this production are basically what has kept the book publishing company Faber and Faber afloat for many years.
Wow.
So I found this out because I went to a talk by the, I think the head of publishing at Faber and Faber, either way, some descendant of the Fabers, and he mentioned that, and so before I even knew what was happening, my hand went up and I asked a question, and the question was, what did you think of the Cats trailer? It was quite a serious literary event. He was a good sport.
What did he say?
He was like, oh, I think it was quite interesting. That's a direct quote. Nice. And then also, if you guys are interested in scammers, we did cover this on the podcast quite early in the year, but Dan Malloy, a.k.a. AJ Finn, really, really great story about him. He is a crime novelist. He basically lifted the plot for his novel from the film Copycat. He also has told many, many lies about his life, including having cancer, all sorts of things, mother dying, brother dying. So really recommend checking that out. It's a great scam story.
Awesome.
It's in the New Yorker, right?
Yes, in the New Yorker.
Very good.
Yeah,
I thought it might be on the spinoff.co.nz.
Oh, sorry. I retract. I retract that.
Copy and paste it. It'll be fine.
It's my turn.
Good. Yes, Alex Casey.
Mine are both objects too.
Cool.
My honours object is, again, I'm not sucking up to her, but it's Erin Simpson's wedding ring.
Sucking up.
The wedding rings of Erin Simpson and Zach Franich, who got married last month. Their rings were 3D printed by Dane Rumble, which I just think is just like...
It's gorgeous. Mwah. It's a gorgeous thing.
It's a gorgeous thing. It sits alongside, like, I think it was last year that I put the Max Key fidget spinner in this holy honours board. It's just that kind of collusion of bizarre technology and, like, celebrities that I just absolutely love.
It's in the metaphorical RealPod Museum, if not the actual RealPod Museum.
I'm working on it. I'm working on it. I'm trying to get into the will. and I'm sure this podcast has helped a lot. My dishonors, the object is the Waipu Terra doll.
Oh, yeah.
The scariest thing of the year. The ancient doll that disappeared from the museum in Waipu and was returned the next day in a bread bag without its hair. Just horrible, and I think about it all the time.
I think about it at least twice a day.
And I just think we need to know more. That's another 8,000 word feature
coming in 2020. Thank you, Alex.
Story.
Duncan, who's back miraculously?
Yeah.
We don't know why. We don't need to know.
Well, I had an optional meeting at 2 and I've got a mandatory at 3. So if we're still going, I could yet make a second great escape. So my Hall of Famer is Trev. From the Great Kiwi Bake Off.
Oh, hey.
Trevor, like, I think I might have, I've certainly enlisted this type of person for various, honors of like, I get confused. I think we have, like, some kind of RealPod annual events where I nominate people for various things. But anyway, Trevor embodies this particular type of kind of Renaissance kind of dude that I'm powerfully attracted to as a personality. He like runs Iron Man, grows plums, he's this army bloke. He's just an extraordinary baker, like incredibly creative and ambitious, misreads briefs, but somehow brings it home. He's got this tussle of curly hair at the front. He's both like incredibly ambitious and sort of fastidious, but also just monumentally generous, will down tools to help struggling competitors in the slightest, opportunity. And, you know, he's now the sole surviving man on Bake Off, and he participates in the spirit of the show beautifully. And Trevor's just we could all stand to be a little bit more like Trev, basically.
What was his selfie biscuit? Was it CrossFit or F45? I can't remember.
It was Eat Clean. It said Eat Clean, Train Mean, and Ice
Right.
Age.
Yeah.
Trev's like a mountain running. Like he's built like
he's Duncan's idol.
Yeah, I've got a lot of time.
Bacon
for
Duncan.
Yeah.
And my dishonest board, like this guy is objectively bad, which is why I put him on the dishonest board. But I also think he's a real classic Kiwi joker, and you know. So he's a nude burglar from Northland who tried to go for a swim in a private pool, and on finding that the cover was on the pool, he down trowel and took a pee into the pool.
Aww.
And then having been halfway there, decided to disrobe completely and wash himself in the spa, which is a detail I kind of missed at the time. And when he'd finished this whole operation, ran off with a giant inflatable art swan. And it just, like, we cover a lot of odd stuff,
yeah.
on RealPod, and that one just really stayed with me, just the narrative arc of it.
I'm surprised to hear he's on your dishonest list, because he sounds like someone you'd be friends with.
Yeah, look, I actually had a cold sweat. I was like, was that me? You know, because you never know what you get up to.
So was he a serial offender?
I mean, I don't think you do that in isolation. I think you escalate.
Has he been caught?
No. It also said he was in his 20s, even though they had very grainy footage. I don't know. There's a lot in the story. Another 8,000 words coming in.
It sounds like a podcast.
Commissioned.
To be honest.
Do we know what part of New Zealand this was in?
Northland.
Oh, so maybe Mangawhai? It's not the same guy taking dumps in the Southland pools.
You can travel all around the country now.
Could be part of it.
Planes. All the roads are paved.
Lock down all the Jetstar domestic fares until we know what's going on.
Yeah, good point.
Great, thank you. Those are great additions. Toby Manhire.
Inspired by the egg-based conversation earlier, I'd forgotten, but the egg boy, who is the guy who egged the senator, Fraser Anning, the Queensland senator, who blamed the Christchurch mosque attacks, brilliantly, on Muslims. Get that.
Yeah.
And then also raised a whole lot of money and gave it to Christchurch based charities and stuff, which was very cool. And if we're going to include him, we also have to include Abdul Aziz, who was the furniture shop owner who was at the Linwood Mosque, who attacked the shooter with an FPOS machine,
yes,
which is fucking hard out and incredibly cool, and saved some lives in the going in doing so, and somehow kind of summed up a lot of things. So he goes up there too. And finally, just to be sentimental, since we're saying nice things to Tina and Alice, who've
Yay.
Been recording all our podcasts all year,
our podcast
brilliantly,
angels.
Getting rid of our defamations, keeping us keeping us happy. And so thank you
and
guys
out
for
of
that.
Jail.
Thanks, guys.
Oh, and bad one.
Dishonors.
Bad. Well, again, Tina and Alice. No. who did I have? Oh, I've got the entire nation of Australia, which is presently on fire and kind of, you know, illustrating in a kind of unmistakable, painful, catastrophic, tangible, tragic sense the impact of human created climate change, and still in this most shocking state of division and incapacity to properly confront those sorts of issues. Mm-hmm. The terrible culture wars, and it's real bad. Let's not be like them.
Bad.
Shame. Ben Thomas.
Because Toby already took people who
tackled gunmen. On his board, yeah, I mean, you know, when you see things like the response to the Whakaari eruption, you know, with chopper pilots just kind of casually dropping in into an ash cloud to go out and pull people off, you know, an erupting volcano. And then, you know, if you're anything like me, you think, I sit down at a desk and write all day.
Yeah.
and I occasionally take brave stands by saying something mean about someone, you know? And when you start to think about what these, you know, pretty everyday people are like in an emergency, it's extremely humbling and extremely awe-inspiring. Dishonors list, I just want to start getting very obscure again. Peter Hughes, the State Services Commissioner.
You know we are in Auckland right now, not Wellington.
I'm just saying what everyone is thinking.
Is there a maths metaphor?
Is there an elaboration?
Although, who was the 50-something maths...
Christopher.
Looked a lot like Nigel Ladder, right? And I can't figure out if that's why I dislike him or Nigel Ladder. But no, Peter Hughes, State Services Commissioner, has over the last few years and continued this year to oversee just an extraordinary lack of accountability in our public service. Gabs McClough, I was hacked by Russians, you know, when he had just like left everything up on the website, leading to an unprecedented budget leak. Escaped any kind of censure from Peter Hughes, who seems to be running the public service like an old boys network. This is the kind of thing that, you know, as a society, we should be trying to move away from, this kind of patronage and sort of feudal system. And recently a bit of legislation, a new state sector act has been introduced, designed by Hughes, and nobody even knows what it does. But it's a reshaping of our public service in the image of, you know, whatever the Wellington Club sort of public sector equivalent is. Anyway, just to end on that populist note.
And that was Ben Thomas's honest opinion, to be clear.
It was very brave, though. Yeah. Very, very brave to say.
Where will Nigel Ladder be on the Labour list next year, Ben?
He made it quite clear he's not running for nobody. On Twitter.
Labour needs to sort out its celeb problem. they need to purge Nigel Ladder. They need to change their cell phone numbers. They need to tell Jason Kerrison to stay in his fucking arc.
Great, thank you. Hey, I'm just going to take advantage of my position as host to add one more person group to my honours list who I forgot, which is... The whānau at Ihu Mātou, Seoul, have shown just the most amazing tenacity and mana and leadership this year. We don't know if they're going to have any success going into 2020, but they have absolutely made history, I think, for Māori and for standing up for themselves and for us, for which I'm very grateful. And on that note, it's been an hour. Well done, guys. Yay.
Can we get an actual honours board like they have at Lord's, where each year, you know, in some gold writing, we put all these names up on there?
Did we do honours board the first time round?
We did, yeah.
Right, so there's 3 years.
Three years worth of honours and dishonours. It's they're great lists.
So, and it's only like 10 to 20 people per year with extensive footnotes.
a lot of people come back in two or three, but yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Hey, thanks, everyone. I'm cutting us off. That's it from us. A huge thank you to our producer and angel, Tina, and her co-producer, Ellen. And thank you for all the support that you give all the pods throughout the year. Everybody look out for a special Christmas Reel pod on Boxing Day. And go to our podcast page on thespinoff.co.nz to check us all out. And we also have a pop-up podcast right now, The Spinoff Book Out Loud, where some of us read from The Spinoff Book, which is available in all good bookstores. All of our podcasts are available on iTunes and Stitcher and wherever good pods are. And if you want to continue to support the work we do, as Simon said, check out Spinoff members. You can support us for as little as $1 a week, and it makes a lot of difference. It's election year next year. We need independent media more than ever. Mere kere hi mete, mete soho Pākehā. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you all again next year. Hei te rātou, hei kona.
Bye. Thanks, Leone.
Thank you. Thanks, Leone.
Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
Hello for Lover, I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spin-Off. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spin-Off member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spin-Off Podcast Network.